Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Here we are at the end of another week. It is the 20th day of June 2014. This is the Horn, headonradionetwork.com. That's our little old home over on the interweb tubes, and that's where you'll find the chat room. That's where you, and you're welcome to jump right in. I'm sure the crowd will be, the gang, the family commune congregation will be wandering along presently, already in the room, Jan and the indefatigable Sparky. Good evening. Yeah, last day of spring. Tomorrow is the solstice. Today is also something else. Oh, by the way, yeah. In addition to the chat room, there's the pop-up, media player, which is really handy. Unless you're on a tablet device or something, in which case we recommend the apps from TuneIn and or Stitcher. Okay? What else? Yes, the ever-present PayPal button. I'm proud to announce that we have a pair of challenges this evening, and by challenges that meaning offers to double your money. Because let's see, where did we end? Yeah, we ended $40 short last night, so that makes us $190 to finish the week even and head downhill toward the end of June. So, yeah, it's the 20th here, and that meant yesterday, toward the end of the day, after the program, I got a note from Robert Mistrelia who said, it's time for the 19th of the month Down Under Up Over Challenge. Robert noting that he would like to see someone match his 50 with their 50, and someone match that 50 with another 50, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which would be wonderful. So we have that on the table. And in point of fact, we also have another offer to match $50 coming in from Alan the Trucker. He mentioned it on the program last night when he called in as he was heading down I-77 southbound through southern West Virginia, through Kanawha County and into Raleigh County. So there you have it. Hopefully, $150 will match another $50, will match another $50, and if both challenges get met here at the end of the week, that means that we will close the week to the good. $10 to the good, to be precise. So hopefully we'll get that moving, and that can happen, and more bills will be paid. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Thank you. This is, of course, how we keep this entire enterprise running, and has been for many, many years now. I'm thinking, where to go? It's Friday on the Front Porch, which means we will start our Friday on the Front Porch roundtable in about an hour or so, I presume. And then after that, so that should be rousing good fun. Remember, we can't really, I've tried and it hasn't worked. We can't really run the telephone number in here and do the Horn Malloy Skype chat group at the same time. So if you would like to participate in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, send a contact request to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunk, Sparky Dunk on Skype, and you will be part of the Skype chat group before you know what hit you. Now, yes, June the 20th, 2014. It is what we call hereabouts West Virginia Day. Because on June the 20th, 1863, Abraham Lincoln signed the order creating the state of West Virginia. So, note it. Pay attention to it. Remember it, even. Because this is the anniversary of the creation of a state whose entire purpose was created out of conflict, and in which conflict of one sort or another has never ceased. This is West Virginia Day. West Virginia broke away from Virginia because this portion of the state of Virginia did not wish to commit treason. The rest of the Commonwealth of Virginia did. But the highland counties, the mountainous areas where slave owning was not nearly as prevalent, where the massive agriculture made possible by slavery didn't ever really take root because there wasn't that much land for doing it on. Well, folks over here were more interested in subsistence farming. That certainly is the history of my family. Farming for to raise enough to feed your family and hopefully a little bit extra to trade and barter with. Well, Bean noting in the chat room, I remember where I was last West Virginia Day. Weird, right? Whatever you're doing must be working, Bob. Thank you, Bean.
Ooh.
No, among other things, the Virginia Constitution prevented you had to. It wasn't just that you had to be a property owner; you had to own a certain amount of property in order to be able to vote, and you also had to be male. Females need not apply. You had to be male and pale and property owning, and that didn't sit well with people in the Highland counties of West Virginia. And it wasn't until like 1851 that the property ownership requirement was even done away with in Virginia. Even so, that you know, Virginia's never been particularly good at democracy, or even the half-hearted attempt at democracy that passes for democracy in the United States. Because, among other things, people in the western counties wanted direct election of governor, legislator, members of the Congress, things like that. So there was plenty to work with by the time the treason came around. You know, when Robert E. Lee and all the other members of the Virginia government decided that they would violate the Constitution, that they would commit treason clearly enumerated in the Constitution, and start a civil war. West Virginia largely didn't go with that. And so, beginning with the secession of Virginia from the United States, that act of treason, people in the western parts of the state, the Commonwealth of Old Virginia, said, "Screw that, we'll secede from you." And oddly enough, that did happen in a lot of places in the South. In the little county in Missouri where I started college, there was a secession movement. And they seceded from Missouri to become the Kingdom of Callaway. No, really. In Alabama, Winston County had no interest in committing treason against the United States government and formed the Free State of Winston. But only West Virginia became an entire state. You know, Winston County went back into Alabama, Callaway County went back into Missouri. Only West Virginia and its constituent counties became an entire separate state. It is the only state ever to be forcefully carved out of another state. And so with the efforts that began in 1861, well, they culminated with the signature, with Abraham Lincoln's signature on the 20th of May, 1863, which stated that West Virginia would become a state 30 days following the execution of the law. Hence, June 20th. Now, you know, and this has been a tormented place ever since. That is not to say it isn't beautiful. You heard both Jason and Alan, the trucker, last night talking about how beautiful, how gorgeous, how majestic it is to pass through here. And when you're not seeing what's being done to it, it is. I mean, breathtaking beauty. Not the soaring, craggy, snow-capped heights of the Rockies or the Andes or the Alps or the Himalayas beauty. I mean, that's just no. This is a lush green beauty of cool hollers and streams running and native brook trout swimming in those streams and in the little pools and eddies, or at least used to. Almost starting with the very inception of the state, the state's abuse began. The state motto, by the way, is Montani Semper Liberi, which supposedly means mountaineers are always free, although there's no verb in there. It's just mountaineers or mountain people. Montani, people of the mountain, mountain people, always free. Which is more of an advertising slogan than it is an actual statement of fact. Devin noting, you can see stuff while driving here. All I get is a green tunnel. It's kind of the point, Devin. Because we've never been free. Now, by the time June 20th, 1863 rolled around, parts of my family had been here for over 100 years. And they had settled down, and they had gotten parcels of land and had begun farming them and raising animals and what have you. So, too, had a lot of other people. And the railroad companies and the timber companies and eventually the coal companies came in with something called a broad form deed that I encourage you to learn more about. And began systematically dispossessing the residents of this state and of Central Appalachia generally of their lands because money. Yeah, Devin notes, and Devin's a West Virginian too. Devin notes, Montani Semper Liberi, free to die or leave. Maybe we ought to change the motto to Wild, Wonderful West Virginia. Y'all come back now and clean up your mess. Because they never do. The early history of West Virginia is a history of governors who are referred to as the Bourbon governors. Because they manifested that kind of an attitude. I don't mean like bloop, 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 Bourbon, but the Bourbon kings of France. Who considered the kingdom their personal property. So too with the early governors of this state. And they conceived a notion that this state could never survive without allowing itself to be brutally exploited. That we had to have the capital from places like Pittsburgh and Richmond and New York and Chicago and London in order to have anything here. Coal had already been discovered by the time statehood came along. So too had the salt sands. Oil and gas would be found in short order as well. And the long nightmare of misery and death would proceed. I mean, West Virginia was, let's see, 40. West Virginia as a state was only 44 years old when the Monongah mine blew up in 1907, killing at least 500 men and little boys, and possibly many, many more. Whose widows were kicked out onto the street, and eventually the coal company decided to pay each widow $75. And a coal executive, I've told this before, you may recall, said, and this was near Christmas, "Well, that ought to make a pretty nice Christmas for them ladies." Most of the widows and orphans were recently arrived from Italy, and most of the miners who died were Italian immigrants who knew less about mining coal than just about anything else on the planet, but had been more or less press-ganged into working in the coal industry. And it happened all over the state. So, every June 20th, I spend some portion of the day in contemplation of what that means, Montani Semper Liberi. Because there just hasn't been a hell of a lot of it for us to always be. My grandfather could not live in a house of his own choosing. He lived in the house he was told to live in by the coal company. He was not paid in legal tender American money. He was paid in coal company scrip. He could not shop wherever he wished to shop. He had to shop at the coal company store or else be fired. And when you shop at the coal company store, you pay wildly inflated prices so that the coal company never actually winds up paying any money to its workers and instead pockets it all. So too his father-in-law, my great-grandfather. It was a form of wage slavery. Freedom of speech did not obtain in the coal camps. You couldn't just talk to anybody or about anything, or you would be put out into the streets, no matter the time of year, no matter the weather. Like I said, not a lot of that freedom to always be rolling around. We have been free to march off to a nation's wars. Since its creation, the state of West Virginia has given more on a per capita basis to the American military of all forms than any other state in the Union. We do love us a good fight. And it is said we are pretty good shots. There are Congressional Medal of Honor winners from West Virginia. There have been generals, admirals, and a whole lot of cannon fodder. Some freedom, huh? We have been blown up, gassed, burnt, crushed, dusted. Not a lot of freedom in the Hawk's Nest Tunnel created by Union Carbide Corporation, where thousands died of a brand new disease we had never heard of before called occupational pneumoconiosis. Oh, us hillbillies have gotten to learn some fancy, fancy words over the years. Occupational pneumoconiosis. That's what happens when you breathe lots of silica sand dust, and eventually in the wet environs of the lungs, it begins to turn to concrete. And you die gasping. Horribly. Learned that the hard way with the Hawk's Nest Tunnel disaster, the worst industrial disaster in the history of the world, until Union Carbide decided to outdo itself and took its show on the road to a little hamlet called Bhopal, India. Some freedom. Much more of that freedom, and there won't be many more of us left. We have been free to have our loved ones washed down hollers by a raging wall of toxic waste. To see our kith and kin hanging in trees after a flood caused by a coal company. We have been free for coal company executives to incinerate us alive past the point of being able to recognize the incinerated as human beings. We have been free to breathe the dust that boils down after explosions on mountaintop removal sites and unleashes into our bodies ultrafine particles that act as absolute demolition engines on a cellular level in our bodies. We've been free to have our garden soils poisoned, our water poisoned, our air poisoned. We have been free to attend funeral after funeral after funeral and scratch our little heads and wonder, I wonder why everybody up this holler is so sick. And free to watch in amazed wonder as our elected representatives say, well, every day somebody else says something makes you sick. Yeah, Stockton Larry in the chat room making an observation. West Virginia target identification is sadly lacking. It's as if the Mountaineers don't know who the real enemy is. That is, them that's trying to kill you. They're not trying. They're succeeding. And they're not real picky about who they kill. They might kill a housewife in the holler who goes out every day and takes care of her cats and dogs and waters the flowers and basks in the luxury in the seeming luxury of listening to the creek run by her house, all the while she's breathing coal company profit based poisons. Or they might just maybe kill an infant in the womb who won't be able to breathe properly when she comes into the world because ultrafine particles easily transit the placental barrier and baby is in the womb struggling to survive and enters life gasping. We are, of course, free to have the water supply, the fresh water supply of 300,000 human beings poisoned. Because nobody much thought, gave any thought to the fact that there was tens of thousands of gallons of said poison sitting right next to the river. And nobody gives much thought to the fact that there are probably lots of other similarly situated tanks full of poison. We are free to have the water that comes out of our wells and out of our faucets. We are free to have it run blood red and have it stink of death itself. We are free. Always free. We are free to sacrifice 4,000 people in the way of excess deaths every year in this state so that 4,000 people can have a job and co. And we are free to listen to those coal people piss and moan if we dare speak up and object. We're free. Much more of this freedom and we'll be in a hard way. Much more of this freedom and all our problems will be over. We'll finally get some rest of the eternal type. So, just take a minute this 20th day of June 2014 to think kindly upon the people of West Virginia. Take a moment to even maybe be thankful to them in the sacrifices that have been foisted upon them over the last 151 years. Because whether we wanted to or not, we have bled and died and sacrificed for the greater good of this nation, the greater good of corporate profits, the greater good of foreign banks, the greater good of people who will never set foot in this state, and yet have dragged the money out of this state in bushel barrels. And not even so much as a pat on the head or a thank you. Just when you think of us, think kindly. The next time you see some hillbilly joke in print or on the internet or on TV, take just a moment and think, wait a minute. Is it really nice to talk that way about people who have sacrificed their very beings? The greater good of the country. Thanks. We do appreciate it. Yeah, Devin, hills of death. And we are, as Devin notes, indeed a corporate colony. Always have been. and unless something changes rather dramatically, always will be. Most of this state is owned by out-of-state interests. The very land of this state, I mean. I may live on this little acre of ground, but a coal company could come in tomorrow, if they already haven't undermined it, and utterly destroy it, because they own the minerals. We once had a beautiful, crystal clear well drilled about 72 feet deep. And it yielded up water that was breathtakingly cold and just as crisp as could be. Then in the mid-80s, they strip mined out the road here, and now it has a red slime in it, and we don't dare consume it. We don't dare even bathe in it. We damn sure don't cook with it. Some freedom. We moved here to this property in 1999. At that point in time, my eldest daughter was 11. The next one along was 5. The next one, my son, Ferg, was basic with 3, and his baby sister Doodle was 2. By the time Doodle and Margie had reached 15 years of age, they each had to go to the hospital and have their gallbladders removed because their gallbladders had become poisonous. Ferg was born with a respiratory birth defect. And our eldest is cursed, plagued by a thyroid gone horribly, horribly wrong. All of these things are at least partially attributable to the air that they breathed when we chose to come over here, because it would be, well, because it was heritage, because this is where my family comes from. This is ancestral country. My multi-great-grandfather owned every piece of ground between the between the Meadow River and the Greenbrier River at one point in time. He stole it fair and square from the people who had been living here for the last 10,000 years. And so most people around here, when they do their title search, will eventually, if they go all the way back, they'll find themselves coming out of a grant or a sale of a parcel of land or a gift of a parcel of land out of my multi-great-grandfather's holdings. And his multi-great-granddaughters were poisoned because the profit-driven coal industry felt a burning need to blow up the mountain that has stood sentinel over this community for as long as this community has existed. A burning need to blow up the mountain that has guarded this vale from wind, tornadoes, which has stood over this little community and this little plateau area for countless millions of years. And then one day, they just blew it up. And it's not just my daughters with the gallbladder stuff. Kids are almost routinely having them removed now because they go bad so early. Yeah. Wonder why. So just a few reflections, and yeah, we'll get into the regular newsy kind of stuff in short order. But some reflections on what it means when West Virginia Day rolls around. How it feels to be the single most abused, subjected, put-upon state in the Union. The sense of rage one feels when one finds out that one's junior senator has co-authored a bill with Mary Landrieu of Louisiana Stan calling, making a ceremonial pronouncement in favor of the Keystone XL pipeline, which doesn't have a God-blessed thing to do with West Virginia or Louisiana. What a slap in the face that Senator Joe Manchin could waste his time on mendacious hooey and yet will not acknowledge in public or private that there is a booming health crisis in his own state among his own constituents because he does not give a tinker's damn. What an enduring shame that man is on the people of this state and the generations that went before them, that sacrificed and died and starved and froze and burned and were burdened under the weight of slake falls miles underground. What an undying shame he is to all of that. You probably didn't want to hear 37 minutes of me waxing frustrated. Oh, but God, the beauty of this state. Is almost inexpressible. Driving the little two-lane roads that wind through the hills, something calls out to you where you just want to pull the car over and hike up into them just to see what's there, just to get into the quiet and let nature fill in around you. To hear the singing of the birds. To feel the temperature change in a second by 5, 10, 15 degrees. From blazing heat. To calming cool. To hear things making noises in the woods and the things that you can't see, you can only hear where they are. To begin to train your vision on distant flecks of movement. Oh, the magnificence. The beauty. Oh, the hills. the beautiful hills. How I love those West Virginia hills. If over land or sea I roam, still I think of happy home and my friends among those West Virginia hills. Yeah. Let's take a break. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. And remember, we have $100 in challenges out on the table this evening. Your 10 becomes 20, 5 becomes 10, your 50 becomes 100. If you want to help out. Thanks.
Leave those mountains down, boys. Leave those mountains down. Don't tear up what the heavens bore. And leave those mountains down. My daddy was a miner, and my granddad's too. They crawled inside the bowels of earth, digging coal and paying union dues. They long since died for King Cole, lay buried in the ground. But if they were here, they'd tell you, leave that mountain down. Leave those mountains down, boys. Leave those mountains down. Don't tear up what the heavens bore. And leave those mountains down. This earth has housed my people. Our sorrow and our pain. We've climbed upon the mountain tops where we've bowed our head to pray. We've seen her through some bad times, but none as bad as this. They're tearing off the mountain tops. You can't put them back again. So leave those mountains down, boys. Just leave those mountains down. Don't tear up what the heavens bore. And leave those mountains down. What gives you the right, King Cole, to tear the mountains down? Once you've stole her treasure, he'll not hang around. Although you'll have your riches, behind a shell you'll leave. And the mountain citizens will pay for all your lust-filled greed. Leave those mountains down, boys. Just leave those mountains down. Don't tear up what God has given. And leave those mountains down.
West Virginia. Got the best of me. I can't remember while I was so free what I wanted to do, what I wanted to see. But I can sure remember where I come from. West Virginia. dead of the night, in the still and the quiet, I slip away like a bird in flight, back to those hills, the place that I call home.
Hazel Dickens, West Virginia, my home. Thank you very much. I just got a note in the chat room from Jan and Jerry saying they have once again reached out to Horsford in regard to the ACAC, H.R. 526, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, the only bill ever introduced in the Congress of the United States that would end mountaintop removal and begin to provide a little bit of that freedom that our motto speaks of, but our state does such a piss-poor job manifesting. The question in the chat room being, how long do you think Harry Reid can dither on MTR, mountaintop removal? This nation has been more than happy to watch West Virginia die in its tens of thousands for 150 years. It's going to take a big wake-up call. And those few of us who are actually working on the ACE campaign are doing everything in our power to deliver it. You know, you can't force them to stand there when the blasts are going off and breathe the poisons. Because, see, do you think David McKinley or Joe Manchin or Shelley Moore Capito any of them would willingly go to a holler community and breathe that poison? Oh, hell no, they wouldn't. They'll stay far, far away and talk about how coal is part of America's energy future. Go figure. But thank you, Jan and Jerry, for continuing to work, to continuing to advocate. Y'all can too. Everybody can. You know, there's a take action button at acheact.org, acheact.org. There's a take action button, and it helps you identify how to get an email or a letter or whatever to your elected representatives. And it's the single best way to help in those efforts. Because out of sight is out of mind. And we hillbillies are becoming downright invisible. But we're not going to spend the evening on all this. Here in about probably a half an hour, we'll get started on the Friday on the Front Porch portion of the program. Remember, if you want to get involved, just send let Sparky Dunk on Skype know, and you'll be right there. Asa pointed out something to me a few minutes ago. He said the Scrip system, phony money, is still going on in the Native American communities of northern Canada in the territories of the Nunavut. I had no idea. Jeremy noting, on behalf of the Vermont portion of the Horn Family Commune Congregation, your family is always free to come and visit Vermont. Yeah, Appalachian Mountains that were fortunate enough not to have coal under them and therefore have not been blasted to perdition. Oh, thank you. A big thank you to Robert, who jumped in and took advantage of Robert in Australia's offer of money matching. Robert's 10 just turned into 20. Thank you very, very much. So there's $40 to go on Robert's challenge and 50 to go on Alan's by way of hopefully getting to the point where we finish the week to the good. Thank you very much. I'm sure Robert would love some company. Oh, let's see. What do we got? Oh, how about a win? How about a happy story of a win? A manifestation that the evangelicals have not completely controlled the planet yet. Yesterday in the UK, a ban was expanded. It is now illegal in the United Kingdom for any school that receives government funding, any state school, any semi-private free school or academy that receives federal funding, it is illegal to teach creationism. Because, see, teaching creationism isn't teaching anything. It is unteaching. It is replacing solid, sound science with superstition and lies. Yay, we got to win. Well, okay, the UK has a win. Can you imagine a bill like that in the Congress of the United States? Can you imagine the aspersioning hissy that Louie Gohmert of the 1st District of Texas would throw? Oh, that's right. There, yeah, Marty pointing out. But, Bob, they're not free over there in the U.K. Only America is free. Yeah, no freedom. Not even intelligent design is permitted to be taught. Because it's not a thing. It's not, because at some point you have to, even with intelligent design, you have to say, and then a miracle. And anything that requires a miracle in order to complete the sequence, it ain't a thing. It's a fairy tale, a myth. Sheesh. Oh, well. America getting left behind some more. Yeah.
And on the third day, God created the Remington bolt-action rifle so that man could fight the dinosaurs and the homosexuals.
Amen.
Yeah. Charming, isn't it? Someday, maybe. Someday. You know what an absolute zoo circus, comic opera even, the Senate race in Mississippi has become, where Thad, don't be Thad, the fun will come out tomorrow. The fun will find. Thad Cochran is in real danger of being unseated by Pappy McDaniel, who is the reform candidate, funded by Klansmen, that kind of thing. No, the Klan may actually have a senator in the Senate of the United States. Which raised at least a thought with me as I contemplate, because I do, I sit around thinking about stuff. Could the Senate of the United States refuse to seat Pappy McDaniel if he wins because he is Klan-backed? Oh, probably not. I mean, that's just more free speech, right? The Klan. Lynching is free speech. Murder is free speech. We've developed a rather twisted notion of what constitutes free speech in this country, haven't we? Chris Pappy McDaniel forced a runoff with Thad Cochran, who is really going to be Thad come Wednesday, probably. And there's been all kinds of skullduggery. A member of Team Pappy got caught sneaking. Well, you probably already know this, but Thad Cochran's wife is elderly, and she suffers from Alzheimer's, senile dementia. And so one of Pappy McDaniel's people snuck into the nursing home where she is warehoused to take pictures of her. Because that's how politics is played in Mississippi, Stan. No, really. And then, of course, on election night, some Pappy McDaniel supporters somehow just managed to get locked in the courthouse with all the ballots. And even the sheriff, the county high sheriff, is saying he thinks that's a little bit hinky. Well, now something else. And we're going to have to go elsewhere for some of the body of this. You're familiar by now, of course, probably, with the account of the Heritage Foundation Muslim slurring panel that they hosted in Washington, D.C. No, Marty, I'm quite certain it's Thad Cochran's wife. Because the whole point, Marty's saying he thought it was his mother. No, the whole point was to then go and try to say, well, Thad Cochran's a catting around on his wife while she's a-laying in a nursing home. But anyway, back to the Heritage Foundation. A woman, it was a woman named Saba Ahmed, attended the Heritage Foundation shindig, whose topic was Benghazi. And she had the temerity to stand up and ask a question at the panel, Ms. Saba Ahmed did. On that panel was a nasty, hateful human being by the name of Bridget Gabriel. I mean nasty. She's part of some AstroTurf organization called Act for America. And she got in on the act in a big way. She was part of the pattern of taunting of Ms. Saba Ahmed that nasty meeting devolved into. Dana Milbeck over at the Washington Post wrote, what began as a session purportedly about unanswered questions, Benghazi, deteriorated into the ugly taunting of a woman in the room who wore an Islamic head covering, a hijab. In particular, Dana Milbeck writes, Saba Ahmed, an American University law student, stood in the back of the room and asked a question in a soft voice. We portray Islam and all Muslims as bad, but there's 1.8 billion followers of Islam. We have 8 million plus Muslim Americans in this country, and I don't see them represented here. And that's when Bridget Gabriel piped up.
180 million to 300 million Muslims are dedicated to the destruction of... to the destruction of Western civilization. Your peaceful majority is irrelevant. Hell, most Germans were peaceful, yet the Nazis drove the agenda, and as a result, 60 million died.
Ms. Gabriel has apparently never been informed of Godwin's Law. Then she looks at Saba Ahmed and said,
are you an American? Your political correctness should be in the garbage.
And then, according to Dana Milbeck, Chris Plant, who was apparently a radio blatherer, right-wing hate radio guy, jumped in with both feet.
Can you tell me who the head of the Muslim peace movement is?
At which point the audience gets involved. Yeah, yeah, uh-huh, yeah. So that's Bridget Gabriel, defender of freedom. It was just icky. But the world heard about it. And so that life support system for a haircut, the Hannity job, had Saba Ahmed on his little sleaze fest. Where he sleezed on her and slimed on her some more, because that's what he does. Okay, so what's this got to do with Mississippi Stan and Pappy McDaniel, right? Over at Breitbart Unmasked, BreitbartUnmasked.com, I was made aware of a piece by our buddy Matt Osborne. Well, Bridget Gabriel was hired, no, really, was hired by the same outfit that is supporting Pappy McDaniel to come down and do some Muslim hating in Mississippi State. Matt Osborne writes, Mark Mayfield, the Central Mississippi Tea Party leader and McDaniel campaign volunteer who was arrested in connection with Clayton Kelly's nursing home break-in, has organized many political speaking events in his Jackson suburb. We know this because we found them advertised on the Mississippi Council of Conservative Citizens blog. Best known for defending slavery, the Council of Conservative Citizens, get it, CCC equals KKK, get it, has a long racist pedigree, Matt writes. Although the site features ugly racial slurs, headlines about the supposed racial superiority of white people, and so forth, all that white nationalist language is oddly missing from their About Us page. The blog authors have instead posted reasonable-seeming boilerplate about a silent conservative majority that must organize against the left. What left, please? To save America from super unspecified dangers. One of those chimeras is the scary brown Muslims who conspire to steal our Constitution with creeping Sharia laws, Matt continues. For the right-wing world is shaped by all kinds of fear and loathing, not just prejudice against a single color or creed, and Muslim bashing has become a growth industry on the right. Mm-hmm. It is. It's an industry. Enter Bridget Gabriel. February 21, 2013, global Islamic terrorism expert to speak. Bridget Gabriel, leading global Islamic terrorism expert, self-appointed, will speak to the public on February 21st at 7 p.m. Ms. Gabriel will talk about the rise of radical Islam in our community and in the USA. I guess their community isn't in the USA. Well, it's Mississippi. Hers is a story of survival as a persecuted Christian living in the Middle East. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, the Bridget Gabriel took CCC, KKK, get it, money to come down and do some hate speaking in Mississippi. And she took the money from the guy who is out there trying to get Pappy McDaniel, Chris McDaniel, Pappy Chris McDaniel, elected to the Senate of the United States because Thad Cochran, oh really, is too liberal for Mississippi. Hoo-wee! Can't just make that stuff up. And Matt also points out that it was Mississippi to which Ronald Wilson Reagan went at the Neshoba County Fair in 1980 to talk about states' rights. States' rights. which of course is dog whistle code for why can't we please have things back the way they used to be 150 years ago. Nice, huh? They do get around, and it is a growth industry. Oof. Stockton Larry pointing out, self-appointment is an abomination, I read someplace. You better believe it. Let's see. We've been to Mississippi, Stan. What else? What else? Oh, how about this? This comes from a radio station, News 92 FM Houston. And, Klan, it's a story about a cemetery, but not just any cemetery. It's a cemetery that contained the last earthly remains of a number of slaves and African Americans who fought in wars, the news account says, and even so were denied a proper burial. The land is privately owned by a family. And, well, let's just let News 92 FM's Dennis Spellman take it from there. Oh, Dennis. Eh, or not. It's called the Bradshaw Cemetery. You can find it on maps by people like Rand McNally and Key. And yet this past Monday, the owners of the Bradshaw Cemetery were somewhat surprised to find a bunch of bulldozers tearing away through the middle of the cemetery. And nobody seems to know whose bulldozers they are. History, schmystery. We got a pipeline to build. No, we don't know that it's a pipeline. That just sort of comes to mind. Because property owners' rights have been recently trampled in the state of Texas in order to create the southern part of the Keystone XL pipeline. Grannies and grandfathers have been sent to jail for trying to stop it. Yeah. Jeremy Nellums spoke to News 92 FM's Dennis Spellman. He said, I don't want to see my grandmother dug up out of the ground. There's no way. I'd die before I'd let that happen. Oddly enough, and surprisingly, I guess, in Texas, or I'm surprised, they actually have a law in there that says in Texas that says that you can't just dig up graves. Trevia Worcester Beverly of the Harris County Historical Commission said they'd better stop and do some investigation because he could be in some bad trouble if he keeps on. When the family that owns the property did confront the heavy equipment operators, well, they packed up and went home. But the problem is, nobody knows who they were in the first place. And nobody knows who to sue for the damages. Because they did some bulldozing. Sure enough. Go figure. No answers.
Now, why would that happen?
You just come in and start bulldozing? Because? I mean, and these aren't unmarked graves. These are graves with headstones and everything. Gotta wonder what they were up to. But isn't it interesting that for all the talk of states' rights and personal property rights and blah, 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 not so much. If you've got yourself a couple of Caterpillar bulldozers, come on in! But then again, we're kind of used to that here in West Virginia. We were talking last night about going and looking at mountaintop removal on Google Earth. If you find Caford Mountain and you zoom down a little bit, you'll find a little tiny green island in the midst of all the destruction. And that green island is the Gibson family's cemetery dating back to the, early 19th or late 18th century. And they have blasted all the way around it. And now the only way that people can visit the cemetery to, you know, put flowers on graves and manifest a remembrance for their heritage and those who went before is to get special permission from the coal company. And there are cemeteries all over central Appalachia, southern West Virginia, eastern Kentucky, western Virginia, where cemeteries have simply been blasted away, and the final remains of the occupants thereof pushed over hills into valley fills with the other spoil. It is Friday on the front porch. It's 18 minutes past the hour. And we are, of course, trying to raise sufficient funds to end the week in good stead. We started the evening $190 behind. And, well, hopefully with Robert in Australia's challenge and Alan the Trucker's challenge, we'll be able to come even. So far, only Robert has jumped into the fundraising. Thank you. So there's $90 more out there that will match yours. You do 10, Robert in Australia will make sure it's 20. You do 20, Alan the Trucker will make sure it's 40. All right. What else? We are coming up on, and I'm just waiting on the bat signal from Sparky for when we're going to start the front porch roundtable. By the way, nursing homes. There was mention of a nursing home in the Pappy McDaniel story because they sleezed into one to try to get pictures of a woman laying unconscious or barely conscious in her bed. If you just let that sort of bang around for a second or so in your brain, doesn't that just make you want to puke? Because it sure does me. I mean, what kind of merciless, avaricious lust for power must a person suffer from in order to be willing to go and do that? Well, back here in West Virginia, and nursing homes are deeply disturbing. I think their very existence is proof of a failing culture. Back here in West Virginia, and this is a story from Wednesday, the Supreme Court of West Virginia, the Supreme Court of Appeals, which is the state's highest court, mercifully let stand a pretty massive verdict against a nursing home and its corporate operator. The original verdict against Heartland of Charleston had been around $90 million, $11.5 million in compensatory damages, and $80 million in punitive damages, punitive meaning to punish. Well, that verdict was reduced to about $32 million in punitive damages. And as I said, the court did let the verdict stand. At the core of this case was the nursing home whose corporate ownership, and this is a quote, refused to authorize the use of additional employees to ensure a staff sufficient to meet even the basic life-sustaining needs of its residents, who are among the most vulnerable, helpless citizens of West Virginia. That's in the opinion. What happened is that an elderly woman went to Heartland of Charleston. This is all, the story grabbed me because it is, well, that's where my mother-in-law died, too. Under circumstances that were probably similar. Also in the opinion, corporate profit was emphasized over the needs of residents. And what they mean by that is that in this particular instance, the victim was ignored to death. Heartland of Charleston, and this happens all over America every day. It is an agonizing decision for a family to institutionalize one of its elders. And then they just hope against hope that their family member, who has done so much for them over the course of their lives, will at least be given some decent facsimile of care. Well, not Dorothy Douglas. Dorothy Douglas could not survive even 3 weeks at Heartland of Charleston. They starved her to death. For money. They ignored her to death. For money. Yeah. The trial was 2 weeks in front of the circuit court. And this is, you'll love this. Defense counsel in the case argued that the jury should never have been told how much money the mother corporation made, that that was somehow unfair.
How are you to assess punitive damages if you don't know how much the defendant is worth? Because punitive damages are a manifestation of the outrage of the jury when conduct is proven to be outrageous.
Manor Care is the corporation that owns Heartland of Charleston, and they are big. A multi-billion dollar entity, according to the opinion, with $125 million in punitive damages insurance coverage. They buy insurance against punitive damages. Now, if you're a corporate board, why do you buy insurance against punitive damages?
Just damn Castle Loaford trial lawyers.
No, you buy insurance against punitive damages because you know that the conduct inside your facilities is so egregious that juries are likely to return verdicts with punitive damages in them.
So in other words, even though these are punitive damages, Manor Care is never going to have to write a check out of its own funds. Because you can get insurance for that. Oddly enough, how about that? I don't see Hobby Lobby out there making a stink out of nursing homes buying insurance against punitive damages. But by God, they're up in Michigan and elsewhere. They're upset that a woman could buy abortion insurance.
Misplaced priorities. Or what Larry identified in the chat room a little bit ago as trouble identifying targets. No. The Hobby Lobby Christians don't give a damn if Granny gets starved to death.
Well, she's just going to go to Jesus that much sooner.
Bless her heart, Justice Margaret Workman is a decent human being, and she sits on the court. And she concurred in the opinion in upholding the verdict, but she was right pissed off that the punitive damages verdict got reduced. She wrote, "It's a startling abuse of appellate discretion. I am unaware of any legal authority which permits this court to toss out a jury award like so much garbage simply because it claims to be confused by it." Oh, but then the fun starts. Do you remember me mentioning a guy who sits on the Supreme Court of the state of West Virginia by the name of Brent Benjamin? Way, way back in, 2004. Don Blankenship, yeah, that Don Blankenship, gave some several millions of dollars to a shadowy organization called And For the Sake of the Kids. You'd think they were buying shoes or something. No, it was a sleazy political effort to get a hand-picked creature onto the bench of the Supreme Court of Appeals of West Virginia, because Don had a big-ass verdict coming up for review that he did not want to write the check for. Don't guess he had insurance. So Don funneled just a goat-gagging load of money into Brent Benjamin, who is, of course, why not, a Republican, and who was soundly reprimanded by the Supreme Court of the United States for the appearance of impropriety he created in not recusing himself from Blankenship's case.
No, I can be fair. Sure. I mean, I'm sitting here because of a few million dollars the guy gave me, but that doesn't mean I'll rule in his favor or anything.
Even Fat Tony Scalia didn't buy that. I don't think. So Brent Benjamin opines in the minority in this case. You're going to love this. According to the Charleston Gazette story, Benjamin said he would not have allowed any punitive damages in the case because of the confusing verdict form that was given to jurors. As referenced by my colleagues, despite the distressing evidence of wrongdoing herein, the confused verdict form is woefully inadequate to serve as a proper legal basis for this court to sustain the extraordinary damages awarded herein. Why are they extraordinary? Why should not a jury be allowed to absolutely drop a big rock on Manor Care and Heartland of Charleston? They starved a woman to death in a health care facility. Not a camp, a health care facility. I mean, that crappy little tub of Chinese apple juice that I was bemoaning that I saw in the hospital a while back. Not even that. Wow. Just wow. So if you know someone, or if you are someone who has a loved one in a nursing home, and God knows if you find out that that nursing home is owned by Manor Care, step up your diligence. Step up your love. And make sure they're not out there starving someone you love to death. Ignoring them into a grave. Because money. And it's an environment like that that Chris McDaniel's supporters went tiptoeing through to try to get a picture of a dying woman. Because those Republicans, by God, and those teabaggers, they got them some family values, don't they? Yeah. We'll take a break, and then we'll get the Friday on the Front Porch roundtable panel started. This is Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Just grow lonesome. waiting for someone to say hello in there. Oh. Talk much more. She sits and stares through the back door screen, and all the news just repeats itself like some forgotten dream that we've both seen. Someday I'll go and call up Rudy. Together at the factory. What could I say if he asked what's new? Nothing much with you. Nothing much to do. You know that old trees just grow stronger. Grow lonesome, waiting for someone to say hello in there. So if you're walking down the street sometime, spot some hollow ancient eyes. Don't just pass them by and stare as if you didn't care. Say hello in there. Hello.
John Prine. Hello in there. It is 38 minutes past the hour. We're more than halfway past the, well, we're past the halfway mark in the program for this Friday on the Front Porch, the 20th of June, 2014. Let us go straightway to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, capably moderated by our buddy Sparky. Good evening, y'all.
Hi.
Good hey,
evening,
Devin.
Bob.
We have Devin. We have Sergi. We have Jeremy. And we have Larry and, of course, Sparky. Good evening, one and all.
Back with Jewish soldiers.
Say what?
Back with Jewish soldiers.
What's happening?
Not much.
How did you celebrate West Virginia Day today, Devin?
I listened to your show.
That seems
perfect. I don't know if it's necessarily a day that is celebrable, I guess.
Celebratory?
However you say it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not much to celebrate.
No, for me, yeah, it really is. It's a day of solemn contemplation. Now, I'm sure they had some sort of West Virginia Day celebration over there in Joe Manchin's office.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, he probably went to the bar with John Boehner or something.
Well, no, or Mary Landrieu and his Republican pals. I tell you, I am absolutely disgusted that he would be co-author and co-sponsor on a bill about the Keystone XL pipeline. What business is that of his?
It's not like it goes through West Virginia.
No. And I wonder how the coal industry feels about it. Wouldn't more tar sands oil
be bad for Coe? Is Joe Manchin got himself some war on Coe?
Yeah, but you got to remember, Keystone is big in West Virginia with the fracking. They have a lot of pipelines in there and a lot of wells.
Well, see, there's something else that sort of sticks in my craw about all this. You know, everybody knows that I've done a considerable amount of put in a considerable amount of work trying to advance the AIC Act in D.C., and my colleagues and I, Bo Webb in particular, have spent hours and hours and days and weeks and months working on this. And one of the things we've heard when we've gone into Senate offices is, well, this is the kind of bill that probably a senator from the region should introduce. Right, and that's the first response. You've got to be kidding. Yeah, hold on. Let me go get hold of. Let me go holler at Rand Paul and see if we can't get this thing moving. But the other side, because the Senate, being the world's smallest, most exclusive country club, they like to maintain their proprieties, and they are very parochial. So theoretically, a senator from, say, Iowa would not appreciate a senator from, say, West Virginia introducing a bill dealing with corn growing or hog farming in Iowa, because it doesn't contribute to the comity of the body. That's comity, not comedy. And yet, there's Joe Manchin, who didn't give a damn about all the people in, say, Nebraska or the Dakotas or wherever the pipeline's going to go through. Didn't give a damn about them not wanting it. He wanted a ceremonial vote showing that he, by God, is supporting our energy future. Right?
Well, he's being used, and he's glad to do it. Senators from the area where the pipeline is know that this is so toxic that they, you know, they dare not to put their name directly on it before a vote. So they'll get him to do it because, you know.
Okay, but explain to me, Devin.
People here aren't gonna.
Why is sauce really?
People here aren't gonna raise a fuss about the coal. You know, they're not gonna say anything about a pipeline either.
Well, why then is sauce for the goose not sauce for the gander? How is it that I have to listen to when I go begging to a Senate office from, say, California or Oregon or Washington or Massachusetts or whatever, how is it that I get the lecture about how they don't want to do that? You know, I mean, they'd support the bill and everything, but they don't want to introduce it because that should be done by somebody from Appalachia. How is it that applies to them but not to Joe freaking Manchin?
Well, because you didn't show up with an armored car full of hundreds.
Or maybe they're scared of him because he shoots at things in his campaign ads?
No, they're scared of the people who fund him.
Oh, the Koch brothers.
Yeah.
Because let's remember, Joe Manchin is the only Democrat in the Senate who's a member of, what's that organization? Koch brothers funded. Alec. Yeah, Alec. Charming.
It sounds, when you say that, it almost sounds like Aflac, but of course it does the opposite. It kicks you in the guts when you get sick, so.
Right.
Ghost responsibility to its fellow citizens.
Here, Sergi.
Did y'all catch the pun?
I got it, yeah. Duck's responsibility, yeah. That's pro quality.
Yeah. I think the only way to get past any of this is going to be if we can somehow amend the Constitution to get rid of this flow of cash into campaigns and all that. That's why I was wondering about what your thoughts were of the current amendment that's come out of committee in the Senate.
Yeah, I was reading that where you sent that to me in email. I'm all for it. It would be the 28th Amendment to advance democratic self-government and political equality and to protect the integrity of government and the electoral process. Congress and the states may regulate and set reasonable limits on the raising and spending of money by candidates and others to influence elections. Congress and the states shall have power to implement and enforce this article by appropriate legislation and may distinguish between natural persons and corporations or other artificial entities created by law, including by prohibiting such entities from spending money to influence elections. Nothing in this article shall be construed to grant Congress or the states the power to abridge the freedom of the press.
But do you think that wording is right?
Just on first blush, it seems kind of squishy.
Well, that's kind of what I thought. It sounded kind of weaselly.
Now, bear in mind, I think
particularly there in the middle.
Do you remember the clip from last week or week before where Ted Cruz was saying, "But what about Planned Parenthood?"
Yeah.
Well, this is that. Because there's language in there guaranteeing freedom of the press, but nothing about freedom of religion. Because remember, they're only spending all of this money for Jeebus. Charming, huh? Lots of charming tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just wondering about the legal ramifications of the language. That's why I was.
I don't know. You know, I'm not a lawyer, and I don't play one on the radio. But this is not the same thing that Donna Edwards introduced over in the House back when Citizens United was first announced, is it?
No. It's been changed quite a bit. And it's definitely not the move to amend language, you know, that
right.
Was like a couple of sentences.
I'm all for elegance in bill drafting. And elegance is a term of art that is also related, as Dr. John has taught us, to science. You try to solve problems with as few steps as possible. Elegance. And so I would simply like to see a constitutional amendment that says corporations and legally created business entities are not persons within the meaning of the Bill of Rights. No matter what Mitt Romney says, or John McCain, or whoever, you know. Corporations are people, my friend.
And money is not speech.
Right. Money is not speech. Seems fairly simple, but apparently not to, well, it's not simple if your wallet is overflowing with those aforementioned hundreds, Devin. It's amazing how money can make you absolutely deaf.
But the problem with that is they're not necessarily overflowing with it because they have to go out here, you know, 6 hours a day on the phone, out in the hallway, or in there. They have to keep a separate office just to dial for dollars.
Yeah. I mean, that's why it's so hard to meet with a senator. It's not that they're so busy doing the people's business. They're busy hustling money. Was it Bob Graham who, or was it Fritz? It was either Bob Graham or Fritz Hollings, Bob Graham of Florida or Fritz Hollings of South Carolina, who just left the Senate in disgust and said, I'm not even getting to be a senator anymore. All I am is a fundraiser. And that's not what I came here to do.
No, I mean, if you, you know, if you were going to work in a call center, I mean, you know, you could do that closer to home.
Oh, Jesus, don't say call center. I've been there. I've done that. Most soul-searing thing I've ever done in my life.
Yeah, I almost went to work for one. You know, they said, you know, sure, we'll hire you. And I asked them, well, what kind of calls would be making? And then they told me, and I said, nope, I'd rather starve. The calls that they were making, this was back in 2004. And they were making all those NRA calls for Bush, you know, where they call up all the old folks and, you know, scare them out of their minds. That's what they were doing.
Yeah. Well, I've said repeatedly that there is a special place carved out in hell for me because I was hustling AOL.
Yeah, well... AOL wasn't calling up little old ladies and scaring the living daylights out of them either, you know.
No. I was also hustling credit cards. Oh, no, really, you need this. It's only got a 21% interest rate on it. You sure you don't want it? And if I could get them to stay on the line with me for a couple of minutes, I could get them to take it. Of course, that was before the big economic collapse and credit cards were being dealt out with about the same frequency as those AOL CDs that you could get for free in the grocery store.
Yeah, well, you didn't have to go to the grocery store. They just fling them in the mailbox like frisbees.
Oh yeah, and I cannot tell you the number of places I went and saw those AOL discs being used as coasters.
Yeah, I have one right here as a coaster, in fact. Well, no, it's an MSN disc. Sorry.
Before they started doing the, you know, AOL CD-ROM thing, you know, before that it was floppy disks. And back then, there were a lot of people who figured out that, you know, with the floppies, that, you know, that they got in the mail from AOL, they could just, you know, reformat the floppy and, hey, free floppy disk.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember when they went to the... There at last, they went to the mini CDs. You know, the little ones that you could fit in a...
Yeah, those things never really caught on, though, did they?
No. You know, those ones that, you know, they weren't completely round. They had, like, two sides chopped off of them.
Yeah.
What were you going to do with the things anyways? Because at least you had something where you could stick it on the spindle. It didn't really work.
No, no, indeed. Oh, by the way, I just got an announcement.
So, sir.
I was going to say, I just got an announcement from Tracy. She and Jan are getting married tomorrow. And I have a link here for anyone who wants to watch it via stream. It will be streamed live to the interweb tubes. And apparently you can watch it on anything but an iPad or an iPhone. Because, of course, iPads and iPhones don't run Flash. you have to get the Ustream app if you've got an iPhone or an iPad.
Wow.
Bob?
Yes, Larry.
If people have an iPad or an iPhone, there are different browsers like Photon or Puffin that they can get that will run Flash.
Oh, really?
So if you have Puffin or you have Photon, you have an option to try to run it. They will run Flash.
I'll be darned. I had no idea. This email that I've got just directs people to get the Ustream app and then look up the church, and the live broadcast is right there highlighted in red. So if you want to watch, I'm not going to put this out there broadly because I don't want to crash their stream. But
okay.
if you want to watch the nuptials of Tracy and Jan, which will I'm sure be lovely, shoot me a note, bobkincaid@gmail.com, and I'll forward this on to you. Okie doke. Now, Devin, I'm sorry, I cut you off. You were going to say something.
I don't even remember what it was. But I will say, I'm sure her ceremony will be fabulous.
I have no doubt.
Devin, you were talking with Bob about working for, taking a phone job, and then you both were talking about AOL and talking about coasters and talking floppy disk with Sergi. That's what you were talking about.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. The thing I was going to ask, is there any updates with AIC?
The work continues. Bo is going back to D.C. this week. To continue, our big focus right now is on getting the bill introduced in the Senate. That it's almost been our exclusive focus for nearly a year, or for a year now. And anybody interested in the civic operation of government should have the opportunity to try to work a bill in Congress. It is an eye-opening experience because you get to see the ebb and flow of the distinct personality of a Congress itself. And so right now, the fact of the matter is, the work is proving more difficult than it has ever been. This Congress has over on the House side, the Republicans have no interest in governing whatsoever, and so maybe I'm speaking out of turn. Maybe Bo would disagree with me, but right now I think our efforts are best made in terms of planning toward the reintroduction of the bill in the 114th Congress. On the Senate side, however, I think we have an opening. And that's what Bo's going to be working on when he goes back. Because there's been a lot of talk among Democrats, especially the ones who are very, very serious about climate change, about how we've got to drag the country kicking and screaming, or at least portions of it, the Confederacy, into the present, let alone the future. And if you're going to adopt an attitude like that, then, well, why not introduce the AIC Act? Because, see, we have, you didn't mean to get a filibobster, but you're gonna, Devin, I'm sorry. We have changed the debate in Washington, D.C. Very few people are talking about surface mining, strip mining, mountaintop removal in Appalachia, and this extends even to fracking and tar sand and the Keystone XL and tar sands pipeline and whatnot, bomb trains even. We're not talking about them anymore as aesthetic offenses, things that just aren't pretty. And we're not talking about birds and bugs and beetles and butterflies anymore. We're talking about real live human beings, people's lives ended and otherwise impacted by this god, these god-awful practices. That is largely the work of the Ape Campaign. Because we got all up in people's faces about it. We're not objecting to mountaintop removal because it's ugly. We're objecting to mountaintop removal because it's killing people.
Yeah.
Well, now we have to take steps to make a connection between killing people and climate change. Coal is the single filthiest fossil fuel on the planet. And the best thing that could ever be done in terms of trying to do something about climate change before we render this planet utterly unlivable for human beings is to make the coal stay in the ground. Now, obviously, the government of the United States cannot compel Australia to stop blasting the bejesus out of its own land and poisoning Australian people. But we could say, we're going to stop mountaintop removal because we recognize that Appalachia has been the absolute cradle, the toxic cradle of climate change. The Industrial Revolution in the United States was birthed in Appalachia, in its coal fields, because that's what powered the Industrial Revolution. As such, if we can get these people to understand that this is where it starts, that Appalachia can no longer be ancillary or tangential to the debate, that it is central to it. That climate change in America started here, and it has to end here. And that we aren't just one part, we are the beginning. And anything else is unacceptable. So that's how we're working. Is that any kind of an answer, Devin?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. It is it's the low-hanging fruit. I mean, if there's anything that's ripe and rotten enough, I mean, you know, that's it. I mean, you know, it doesn't get any nastier than coal and the way we get at it here.
And everything that flows from it. Because there's not a lot of distinction between mountaintop removal coal and underground dug coal, because before it can go out, it has to be prepped. People yeah. Generally, A, don't think about coal, and B, they don't think about what's involved in making it useful. But, for instance, methyl chlorohexane methanol is used as a coal preparation agent to separate coal from bits of rock and grit and clay and dirt, because dirt doesn't burn very well. And so
that's where you get those clinkers in the power plants that are the size of a house.
Well, yeah, that for starters. Because now in more modern coal-fired power plants, and that's sort of oxymoronic, the coal is ground down, pulverized to almost a powder, and it's blown into the burners that heats the water, that generates the steam, that turns the turbines, that, you know. But it has to be really, really refined. Not clean, but refined. It has to be just coal, or the process doesn't work very well. And so, you know, when you use the water and the flocculants and the chemicals and the toxins to make this coal useful, whether it be on the export market or domestically, you got a lot of leavings. And that's the toxic waste that gets pumped up behind the dam where it's going to be there for the next 10,000 years. And so that's got to go too. And I'd love to know the answer. I do not know. I don't have the technical expertise, Devin, to know what the answer is to these seas of toxic waste. Do you siphon?
There really isn't one.
I mean, do you siphon it out and haul it away? Do you hope that it's because, I mean, evaporation's not going to do much for you because ain't much of it water. Right?
Well, anything volatile eventually will, waft away, but.
Or leach into the ground.
Yeah. And your solids, I mean, even if you put it, say, back in the ground somewhere, that's still a problem. I guess if you put it back in the ground, at least you don't have to worry about it, collapsing and, running its way to the Mississippi. But it doesn't do much for us around here. The way you have to look at it is.
Well, I mean, we've already tried pumping it underground.
Our water is toast.
Yeah, we've already tried pumping it underground. That's how all the people in rural West Virginia wound up getting poisoned.
Yep. Anyway, you figured it's not good for West Virginia. There's no good answer.
I'm back in.
Hey, Sparky.
It's been a little hectic around here.
But
I was going to tell you that copper mine project thing I worked on.
Yeah.
Where they sucked the sludge out of the Sacramento River and pumped it up this big hole in the ground that they lined. They just let it, harden, and then they put a cap over it.
Wow.
And then the sludge dam that they had before that leaked, it still just sits there. I don't think they're ever going to just take the sludge and goo and crap out of it.
And so that's toxic forever, though, right?
Oh, yeah. That iron mining project, that's just got sulfuric acid and all kinds of stuff in it.
So there's somewhere around 100 billion gallons of this stuff in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
I would appreciate, the input of our real smart, science-y Horn Family Commune Congregation members in just sort of brainstorming. What do you do with that? Do you just leave it there and let people live under the looming shadow of that day of death that's waiting?
I have an idea.
Well, the government's going to have to clean it up, that's for sure, because they'll just walk away from it when the coal's gone.
Can't do that. Got to have tax cuts.
Yeah, I mean, no, all kidding aside, I've been arguing for years that Appalachia needs a Marshall Plan to transition us, because we've been through the boom and bust cycle several times, and the coal company comes in and everybody, yay, we got a little town, look at our little company shacks, yeah, oh hey, look, a grocery store, oh, we've got a movie house. There were two movie theaters in this little town down here once upon a time, three grocery stores, a couple of banks, furniture store, clothing stores, pharmacies, pool hall, bars, several bars, a couple of hotels. It's all gone. Because when the coal company left, everything fell apart around it. And the next bust that comes in the boom and bust cycle is going to be the final bust. There won't be coming back.
It's called internalized profits, externalized cost.
Well, exactly, Roger.
I do have an idea about what to do with all the waste.
Does it involve...
Just do what Japan does. Dump it all in the Pacific.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean, it's already radioactive, so, What difference would it make?
How are you going to get it to the Pacific in bomb trains?
Well, it's not like it's going to explode. I mean,
that you know
taking
of.
All the good stuff out.
Jesus.
Anything volatile enough will already waft it off.
It isn't wafting. It's not wafting very well so far, Devin.
Well, I'm talking about the explosive stuff.
Well, even if I could agree with your transporting the Pacific, the amount of fossil fuel energy it would take to transport all this shit to the Pacific is going to increase our carbon footprint and help us be condemned anyhow. So why even worry about it?
Yeah, I think Devin's tongue is firmly in his cheek.
Well, I'm sure it is, but look at the carbon footprint to transport from West Virginia to the Pacific. We're talking a serious problem.
Well, that would just be silly. Why would we do that when we can just dump it in the Atlantic?
Well, dump it in the Gulf because it's already poisoned.
Yeah.
I mean, we send train cars full of coal to Norfolk, Virginia all the time.
I mean, all you have to do is get it to the Ohio River.
If you want to send it to the Gulf.
otherwise, you have to take it across the Eastern Continental Divide, and I guess you could send it down to Baltimore, dump in the Chesapeake, because you know that place is done too.
I'll put it in the Potomac and let all the congressmen that fish for bass eat them.
Are there people who actually eat fish
out of the
Potomac?
I don't think they fish anymore.
I there are fish in the Potomac because I've seen them, but I don't know of anybody that ever fishes it.
Do they have three heads? Because I mean, we really have that here in Appalachia. We've got fish that are born with two heads, fish that are born with crooked spines. I call them Homer Simpson fish.
Yeah. We have some interesting catfish over in Ohio.
Oh, did you see that record-setting catfish that was caught a couple of weeks ago?
Huge. No, I didn't.
Oh, it was caught out of the Ohio River. It's huge. I mean, just monstrous. And I just looked at it and said, anybody who would eat that is crazy.
It's one of those manhole fish. Eat a manhole.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've talked to people who went muscle diving out in that area, and it's nothing like having one of those come up behind you.
It's not one you can get noodling in.
No. These boys don't noodle. This is the kind if you get it. When you get it up to the boat, you shoot it in the head.
You know, I often wonder
with an elephant gun.
What possesses the people to stick their hands down into the catfish mouth to catch them like that? A noodling thing. That's almost like open carry gun deal in the stores.
Oh, by the way, speaking of open carry, now some women have started open carrying to Target. Saw that picture earlier today. Charming.
Yeah, that kind of made me...
Well, it is right on the front of the building.
Bad one, Devin.
Bad.
Anyhow, I'd like to change the subject here just a little bit.
Do please.
Several weeks ago, Bob, you were... there was that 55555 math problem that was on the Facebook number.
Yeah.
And you made the comment, well, I don't know what to do because there's nothing to tell me what to do. There's a thing in mathematics education called PEMDAS, P-E-M-D-A-S, and that's the order of operations. If there are parentheses, you do them first.
Yes.
If there are exponents, you do them next. Then you do your multiplication in order from left to right, your division in order from left to right. Then you do your additions in order from left to right, and then you do your subtractions in order from left to right. And if you follow that PEMDAS rule, you will always come up with the right answer.
I'll be darned, I will remember that, because I'm most familiar with PEBCAC, Roger.
I don't know that one.
Problem exists between keyboard and chair.
Oh, okay. All right. I am an old school math teacher.
I had a lot of good teachers growing up. For some reason or another, I did not have great math teachers. Great Latin teachers, wonderful biology teacher, wonderful French teacher, great drama teacher, chemistry. I had literally the best high school chemistry teacher in the United States. Math, not so much.
Well, frequently, school will take a football coach and have him teach math so that all the football players can be in that math class so they can get a passing grade and still be on the football team. But back when I was teaching advanced eighth grade math, I had my kids make a slide rule to teach them the history of mathematics and learn how to deal with exponents. But
I'm so old, I actually, that best chemistry teacher in the United States that I had, She would not allow a calculator into her classroom. Of course, I'm old, but she did insist that we all learn, and everybody had one. These were scientific grade slide rules. We didn't get to keep them, but we learned how to, by God, use them. They were fun.
Well, and the neat thing about a slide rule is if you key it correctly, you're teaching the rules of exponents, which kids have a really hard time learning. When you add exponents to do multiplication and you subtract exponents to do division, but when you teach it along with the slide rule, it starts making sense to the kids. I know. I realize I'm getting a little off in the wall.
No.
Second topic. I have never ever taken lettuce and used onions and poured hot bacon grease over it.
Then you have not lived.
Well, that may be. Now, for all the people that don't know what we're talking about, is I posted a picture in my Facebook page and Bob commented on it.
I see beautiful green lettuce growing, and that's something my grandmother did. It's a hillbilly thing, I guess. I don't know. But the fresh green lettuce out of the garden, nicely washed, kind of blotted dry, and thinly sliced onion, and hot, sizzling bacon grease.
And you put the onion on raw?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
And the hot bacon grease kind of cooks the onion a little bit as it hits it, and it wilts the lettuce, and with just a little bit of salt and pepper, it's summertime eating to me.
Hmm. Have to give it a try.
Oh, it's they call it killed lettuce or wilted lettuce.
Well, I've wilted lettuce, but here on the West Coast, the only wilted lettuce I've had is you slice it really thin and you get a giant skillet and you put a little bacon grease in the bottom and you throw the lettuce in the skillet and put a lid on it for about 20 seconds and then serve it.
Okay, well, that's the same principle. We're just cutting out the iron skillet, or we're using the iron skillet to fry the bacon, and then pouring it directly over in the bowl. And maybe if you're lucky, maybe you got some salt rising bread or some sourdough bread to sop up the remaining yummies at the bottom of the bowl.
Yeah, well, one of those things I'm going to have to try. I still got to go out and pick 100 heads for tomorrow, so.
Oh, off to the farmer's market, are we?
Yep.
Well, I was going to tell you, that is an absolutely beautiful photograph. It just made my heart sing to see it.
In about a month, I'll have my wife go out and build an album and post it.
I miss my garden something fierce, even though the last one I planted got eaten by the rats with antlers. I want it back badly.
Well, what you saw in that picture, well, and the second one I posted, are two very small portions. There's almost an acre of garden.
Oh, wow. Yeah, see, I can...
Now, wait a minute. You've got to go get 100 heads. You're going to have to break out the National Razor for that.
Well, I just take out my little pocket knife and crawl down the row and fill up the garden way cart and take them over to the bathtub sink and put them in big white ice chests and put a little ice over them and park it overnight. And tomorrow morning at about 6, I leave and go to farmer's market and try and sell them.
I'm just curious, and I don't want to get into any proprietary business secrets or anything. How much do you get for a head of that lettuce, Roger?
I'm selling them at $2 at the market normally, but I think tomorrow I'm going to be $1.50 because I got to get rid of them.
Because you're getting late in the season?
No, this is the first patch.
Oh.
I'm just getting started.
Oh, wow. How are you set for tomatoes?
Oh, don't even try to grow them. It's too damn cold.
Wow.
I don't do tomatoes. I don't do corn. I do broccoli, cabbage, cauliflower, scarlet runner beans, potatoes, asparagus, artichokes. That's enough for right now.
I'll tell you what, while we were in D.C., Ferg absolutely went rhapsodic. There's a little German restaurant not too far from the where the apartment is, or, well, our apartment was. And it was asparagus season, of course.
And, oh, asparagus is great.
Apparently in Germany, I experienced a little bit of it. There's an absolute madness for asparagus. And so this little German restaurant was sort of mirroring it. It was, you know, Spargel season. And they had a white asparagus salad that was nothing but blanched, steamed asparagus cut in small pieces, tossed with strawberries, and covered with a sweet and sour lemon vinaigrette.
Yeah, be good.
Oh, wow. I mean.
There's another really good recipe, and you can Google it. Dirty asparagus.
Ooh, that sounds
and,
fun.
And it, I'm sorry that Tim from L.A. is not here, because there's a Japanese name for it. It's mirin, black sesame seeds, sugar, soy sauce, poured over very quickly cooked, kind of hot raw, but then you make it cold. So it's cold but crisp but not raw. Asparagus recipe that is just dynamite.
Wow. Well, Tim is in the he's in the chat room, so maybe
yeah, he's in the yeah, he's probably hearing it. Maybe I ought to click over and see if he's responding.
I'm watching it. I'll tell you if he does.
Well, I just swapped. But, no, it's great. And I like my asparagus grilled, too. But, and this is what I like to do is take and let it marinate for about an hour in olive oil and garlic salt and then put it on the grill. And just get it where it's hot, crisp. It's great.
Oh, man.
But then I also make pickled asparagus and pickled beans, and I forgot to mention the snow peas and the shelling peas I grow and
yummy.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'm really not. Suddenly my evening's bowl of spicy chicken ramen is just not cutting it. Ugh.
Well, it takes an awful lot of time, effort, and energy to grow a garden an acre in size.
Oh, no doubt. I've been known to go a little, and this was years ago now, before the tiller got stolen. I've been known to go crazy. We've got roughly an acre here, and at one point I was gardening every bit of half of it. And that was a brutal amount of work. And that's what makes it so heartbreaking when you get up one morning and 125 tomato plants and 72 chili peppers have been eaten down to the ground by the goddamn deer.
Yeah, well, lead poisoning works really great on deer.
Yeah, but I got neighbors.
Yeah, well, so do I, but a 22 works great.
I had a guy offer to take care of my deer problem. He said, And what I'll do is I'll, and he was going to use a 30-30 carbine.
Too noisy.
No, here's the trick. He puts a baby bottle nipple over the muzzle. and it becomes a muzzle brake.
And that becomes enough of a silencer?
Yep. Just pop.
The last one I did, I taped the flashlight to the barrel of 22 and had to chase it around to where I could shoot to where there weren't neighbors. But next time it happens, I'm going to do it from the upstairs.
Yeah, but I've mentioned this before. The greatest success I ever had with keeping deer out, and I did this when we lived somewhere else, and I no longer have the stuff, but I fenced in my garden with electric. But, you know, after sometime, and you have to put a strand low for the rabbits and the small critters, and then you put strands high for the deer. But they'll still try to, and they'll jump the wire. They can jump that well unless you're putting it up 8 feet with razor wire and stuff. But no, an old timer, when I put my electric up, said, before you put the, after you found out that everything works, which my helper found out by plugging the fence up and then licking his fingers and grabbing the wire.
Dumb.
No, I'm not, well, you know. I definitely knew that it worked because I could tell from the look on his face and the hair that was standing on end and, you know, little bits of smoke. But anyway, so then you power it down once you know it works. And the old timer told me just to paint every wire all the way around with peanut butter, which I did. And I mean, the deer came from every corner of that county because they smelled that peanut butter. And they stuck them little deer tongues out to lick that peanut butter and got a dose. And the snorting and the honking and the coughing that deer do. I mean, it sounded like a TB ward. And you know what? I did not see another deer anywhere near that fence for the rest of the summer.
That's a good one, old timer trick.
And so that's because people say, well, you know, go to your barber and borrow get a bag of hair. And deer get used to that. I mean, they learn what's dangerous and what's not.
Well, see, I never had a deer problem until they fenced the airport. And they put up a 10-foot fence around the airport, and all of a sudden I had a deer problem. And they'd jump over my 4-foot-tall gate and all that. So I have an 8-foot cyclone fence all the way around my property. And unless I leave the gate open, I don't have a deer problem.
So these deers aren't these lovable...
No. None of them. No.
Deer are like gophers. They're a pest.
Okay.
Yeah, don't let Bambi, I'm guessing you probably watched Bambi. That probably gave you the wrong idea.
Well, apparently... People used to eat deer.
There's a reason we put out a contract on them every year.
Okay, because you know, Native Americans used to eat deer that's what they...
Native, well, yeah, absolutely, and so do hillbillies. I mean, there's a lot of people here who fill their freezer every autumn with their deer, and they eat deer all year. The problem
is... Venison is a really good-tasting meat, and they're a vegetarian, and it's lean, and it's a whole lot better for you than beef, and they reproduce like rabbits, and they're great, but... When you can't shoot a gun in your yard because you got neighbors all the way around you and they're wiping out $75, $80 worth of snow peas in one night, it's time for Bambi to go in the freezer.
Yep. And see, this is, and what we have unwittingly identified here, Roger, is that intersection between reasonable, responsible, rational, needs for firearms and the idiots who need to take them to Target because they're so pants-wetting terrified.
Well, the last time I walked down the street with a firearm was when I was getting it back from the sheriff's office because they took it away from me because I was chasing a little bastard down the street. that was stealing shit from me. But anyhow, I went to the county courthouse. They gave me my rifle back, and there was some ammunition. And they said, well, I just take it out and take it to your car. I said, I'll leave the ammunition here, and I'll take the rifle, and then I'll come back and get the ammunition. And I had it inside a case and, you know, all the rest of that kind of stuff, because I wasn't going to carry a open firearm. No way.
You were chasing someone
down. That's your constitutional right in West Virginia.
Yeah, well, it's constitutional right in California, too. Yeah, I was chasing a little bastard down the street. Well, he'd stolen a gun from me, so I knew he could be armed, and Highway Patrol showed up and drew on me, and the sheriff showed up and spent a couple hours in the back seat of a cop car in handcuffs, and they brought me home and told me to stay there and had to get somebody else to go get my truck. And
did they chase down the little bastard?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he ended up, he was like 16, 17 years old, stayed in juvie till he was 21. And had to pay me restitution.
See, that's
his ass got nailed.
We got a lot of that kind of crime in West Virginia, it always sort of amazed me, Roger, because there are people out there who will break into a house that they know is chock full of guns to steal the guns.
Oh yeah,
because I don't know about where you are in Northern California, but where I am. Appalachia generally, firearms are more liquid than gold in terms of asset value.
Why the hell do you want to buy gold? You can't eat it.
But I mean,
Rogers in Humboldt County. Right?
Yep. Marijuana is more valuable than gold. If you can find a market for it.
Yeah, that's what I meant by...
Yeah, no, I got the Humboldt reference immediately.
Only time I've had to deal
and
with
it's
that.
Very green.
Oh, it's the ultimate sustainability crop. Because it'll practically grow on concrete.
Why do you think they call it wheat?
It's West Virginia.
I mean, far be it from me to tell the coal industry anything, but if I were the coal, if I were the land companies that the land reverts back to, I'd be lobbying the state legislature for some industrial hemp permits, and see if you can't maybe rejuvenate the soil on some of these mountaintop removal sites with hemp, not cannabis, hemp. Because unlike something
problem
like cotton,
it's hard to mechanically harvest on there.
I don't necessarily know that you want to harvest. You're just trying to build soil.
Well, I do know that in like Ohio and places like that, the industrial hemp is still growing along the irrigation ditches and that kind of stuff. They call it ditch weed. And it's got no THC in it at all, but people think it does, so they still smoke it.
And they get such a headache.
Bob?
Yes?
Roger can speak for himself, but I just wanted to mention that Humboldt County, it's a rural county, but it's a very liberal county. So,
oh, I know.
It's a cool... You know, I've not been there, but, you know, they were the people... When we had an America Speaks... when I was invited to an America Speaks thing on single-payer health care in California, and a bunch of us got together, were invited. The Humboldt County people were the group, other than the Bay Area, that were the most insistent that Governor Schwarzenegger at that time embrace talk about the single-payer health care, which the conference really tried to avoid. So
yeah, well, that's really fine, Larry, except three of our five supervisors are Arkley people, and Arkley is just a half a turn away from the Koch brothers.
Ew.
Yeah, but at least you didn't have a state of Jefferson ballot initiative.
No, we didn't have that.
I love the disgust in Sparky's voice, state of Jefferson.
Well, what I assume, Bob, you know what Sparky's talking about there. But
oh, yeah.
Who was that crazy, crazy ass from Southern Oregon who was running for Congress? I can't remember his name. But he was just
a outrageous
dude. Yeah, well, quasi-scientist dude.
Yeah.
But the northeastern section of California, and even Del Norte County, which is the very northwest of California, and Siskiyou, and the very southern part of Oregon, have some of the most right-wing, teabag-type folk.
Chase them with the big net.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They're just off the wall. And the rest of us that try to be rational have to put up with their crap. I mean, Alpine County is an example of just a super right-wing weirdo number. They would secede from California if they thought they had a chance.
What about Modoc or any place like that? Same thing?
Same thing. The rural Northern California folk are just bonzo.
What? Okay.
Modoc County, everybody's got an Easy Rider rifle rack in their pick-em-up truck.
Oh, God. Well, I think we've identified something, and I think it's borne out in the demographics across the country. Urban areas, and I'm not using urban as dog whistle code. I mean urban as in city type.
Understand.
Urban areas are almost uniformly trend progressive, liberal, democratic. Rural areas, on the other hand, trend toward the more entrenched, cranky, crotchety, conservative side of things. Is it because of isolation? Or is there any identifiable factor that makes it that way?
Speaking as someone who lives near the downtown of a major city, I think one of the biggest factors that cause urban areas, I think one of the biggest factors that cause urban areas to trend progressive is that, unlike in suburban or rural areas, you know, when you're out and about, you pretty much have to interact with people of all walks of life, all socioeconomic backgrounds, all racial backgrounds, et cetera, et cetera. And when you are surrounded by people who, you know, are different than you and have different circumstances than you, you know, you tend to become more understanding, more compassionate, more, you know, reasonable, and that translates into being more progressive.
I've got another proposition, too, and that is in the urban environment, city, whatever, you might be able to get a national public radio station or a, here in Humboldt County, it's Keat TV, but NPR kind of stuff. And in the rural areas, all you get is right-wing media 24/7 on any radio station you can pick up.
I think that's a factor, too. I would also add in, though, that while urban areas have a concentration of population, the wealth is actually more decentralized. You got more people spending more money, yada yada. Whereas in rural areas, you've got concentrations of wealth that mm-hmm. tends to breed that sort of crotchety, crankety, cranky right wingery.
Roger, what about just south of you? You've got Del Norte, you've got Humboldt, you've also got Mendocino. You've got Sonoma and Marin County, and like Bolinas, where I'm told that they don't let anybody go to Bolinas. I mean, they don't let anybody into Bolinas or Bodega Bay or any of those places. Those are all somewhat rural areas, but they tend to be more liberal than the stereotype of the rural area that's, you know, a conservative area.
Well, Bolinas is just kind of a quirky little town that take the roadside down so people can't find it. But once you get into the town, everybody's cool.
Okay. But I'm asking about the, like, Mendocino County, Fort Bragg, and, you know, those places.
Fort Bragg's not a bad place. It is a little bit right-wing, and yet a lady who won a supervisor position by one vote was an incredible liberal and lived in Fort Bragg. So, I mean, you've got your fishermen, you got your loggers, you got mill workers. Of course, they're basically all gone now. And then you got a whole bunch of dope growers that are liberal libertarians.
Yeah, I've heard some scary stories about the dope growers. Now, I've heard that they can be absolutely vicious.
Well, right. But most of that's a Mexican cartel. It's not the people that are living on some family dirt and growing 15 or 20 plants for their own use and make a little money. The vicious people are the ones that go onto the national forest or the timberlands and have 5,000 plants and bring people up from Mexico and arm them with AK-47s and dump diesel oil in the creeks and fertilizer in the creeks and drain the creeks for irrigation and dry up the spawning area beds. And I mean, it's a two totally different things.
Okay.
Which is a danger with cannabis decriminalization and legalization, insofar as long as we're participating in a so-called market-based economy. That's what the future of cannabis farming is it not?
No, I think the future of cannabis farming, if it gets legal, depending on how it gets done, is Monsanto is going to use a 500-acre parcel that they have over in the Sacramento or San Joaquin Valley with historic water rights. They're going to put up a razor wire fence at 20 feet tall, guard towers, armed guards, and grow a huge crop and turn it over to Philip Morris to make cigarettes that you can buy at your local Circle K.
Oh, by the way, backing up the loon that you were talking about in Oregon, would that be Scott Lively?
Not sure.
Okay. Had a query coming in from Jessica.
I just remember a couple of years ago I was driving up to Eugene just to visit my son, and there were these signs all over the southern Oregon, and fortunately he didn't get elected.
Seems like to me like he got elected into the Oregon Republican Party chair or something like that recently.
That could be, but I mean, if you think Tea Party folk are bad, I mean, this guy was an absolute creationist, anti-evolutionist, super fruitcake.
Yeah.
I love
Rachel Maddow interviewed him once.
Hey, by the way, just to throw it out there for people's consideration, because we're 17 minutes before the hour and 17 minutes from done with this evening's Friday on the Front Porch, it has been really, and I mean really slow this evening. Thank you to Thomas and to Sal, and thank you to Robert. Thanks to them, we have answered $20 of Robert's up over down under challenge from Australia this evening. 30 to go on that, and another 50 to go on the matching challenge from Alan the Trucker, because that would meeting both of those would effectively mean that we finish the week okay. But, yeah, it's been, just in case folks think otherwise, no, it's been a tough fundraising evening, just saying. By the way, I ran across something I got to share with you since we're talking about teabagging loons and the hatefulness and viciousness of the right wing. You know, last night I ran that clip of the former governor Mike Huckstraby trying to pick a fight with Chief Justice John Marshall and arguing that Martin Luther King would be against marriage equality because Nazis. No, really. So this was at the Faith and Freedom Coalition's Road to the Majority conference. It's been going on all week in Washington, D.C. And someone just happened to be attending their little conference and went to the men's room. Guess what that person found?
Huckster be tapping his foot under the stall.
Probably, but no, he probably gets his own bathroom for that. Yeah, kind of the way, what's his name, that Virtue, Bennett, the Virtues guy, gets his own slot machine in his motel room in Vegas. No, it was worse than that. The urinals had little plastic busts of Barack Obama in them.
Oh, bud.
Wait a minute. Huckabee had...
No, not Huckabee. This is the conference he was speaking to.
Oh, okay.
No, yeah, little Barack Obama, you know, bobblehead kind of thingies in the urinals.
So were they... So maybe I'm not following. That happens these days. Were they making fun of Mr. Obama, or were they...
So you can piss on Barack Obama.
That's horrible. Well, that's kind of...
naturally, because they're Christians, right?
It's juvenile is what it is. It's silly. It's juvenile. That's what it is. That's exactly what it is. Anyway, I just wanted to get this in before 6 o'clock rolls around. Bob, I was really moved by your speech today about West Virginia Day, and it made me want to go out there and just take that speech, and I want to, you know, get it out to all the major media at Pacifica, and I want them to hear it, and I wish that we could get it out there so that, because it was really moving. Thank you.
Thank you very kindly.
Larry, I think we could probably have somebody work on it and put it up on YouTube, like our friend Horace.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I found the guy's name from Oregon. It's Art Robinson.
Art Robinson.
Posted a link. Okay. He's the Oregon Republican Party chair now.
Oh, lovely.
And, I gotta tell you that,
well, I mean, yeah. And who knew that Oregon politics could be so wacky? I love the idea that Jeff Merkley's Senate challenger from the Republican Party is an ex-stalker. And, you know, usually your stalkers are, you know, creepy dudes. This is a creepy woman who's a surgeon. And both of her former boyfriends, paramours, significant others, wound up, complaining about her stalking them to the authorities. But, of course, since she's a surgeon, no charges were filed.
Dr. Monica Wemby?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I got.
I do love political years. You got the woman with the DUI hanging over her head, running for the Minnesota Supreme Court and waving a Bible around, making up quotes from George Washington that George Washington never said. And there's always Victoria Jackson down in Tennessee who's going to save the children of Tennessee from Common Core. Beautiful, ain't it?
You know, when I think of Victoria Jackson, I'm thinking about that Victoria, whatever her name is, that used to be on Saturday Night
Live. That's the one.
That's her.
You're kidding. Oh, boy.
She's running for county commission in some county south of Nash Vegas.
God, my goodness. Well, shoot me in the head.
Larry!
Oh, God.
Hey, by the way, comment coming in from Steve in China regarding cranky right-wingers in rural areas. He says, cranky people in rural areas, white flight plus automobile culture equals fear of others. With regards to California and points north, some old hippies just fall in love with the security of money.
You know, Bob, I have an old college friend who was an anthropologist, and I asked him a while back when I was first, you know, getting on my southern kick, and he lives in Nashville, and I said, would I survive in Nashville? He said, Larry, there are a lot of hippies here. You do just fine. Don't worry.
Nashville is a wonderful town. Absolutely wonderful. I love Nashville. For my money, I prefer Nashville to Atlanta. There's just a better culture there. just oodles of fun to be had. And, of course, you know, Music Row. Hey, well, something awesome just happened. Henry, thank you, Henry, just took care of the remainder of the night's fundraising. So both Robert's challenge has been met and Alan the Trucker's challenge has been met. I cannot tell you how important that is. So thank you very kindly, Henry, and thank you to Alan and Robert for seeing to it that we finished the week okay as we roll downhill toward the end of June. Oh, hey, something else. I just happened to see, ran across something last night. Have you seen that Harley-Davidson is putting out an electric motorcycle?
Yeah, my question was whether or not they're going to put a audio recording and speakers on it so it sounds like a Harley.
I immediately thought about the noise, too, because I've had some buddies who were big Harley aficionados in there, and they are absolutely convinced and devoted to the concept that loud pipes save lives.
Well, I wouldn't really argue with them on that because there's a lot of motorcyclists that get wiped out because the driver doesn't see them.
Yeah, it's usually not bad motorcycling that winds up getting people hurt on motorcycles. It's bad automobile operators. I mean, and not this, but it was Earth Day several years ago. We were standing out in the driveway getting ready to go over to the Earth Day celebration in Fayetteville. We watched a young man get killed down at the foot of our road. And it had absolutely nothing to do with how he was riding his bike.
Well, and there's a big problem now with electric cars running over pedestrians.
Because pedestrians don't hear them.
They don't hear the car. And a while back there was a thing about whether or not there should be a noise machine incorporated into electric cars.
Don't you think that, I mean, isn't that just a learning curve kind of thing? Or, I mean, where do you fall on that, Roger?
Well, you look right, you look left, you look right, you look left, and then you cross the street.
Yeah.
And then you go to England, and when I was 14 years old, and fortunately there was a guy standing at the curb that grabbed my collar and pulled me back because I'd only looked right, I hadn't looked left. And in England, they drive on the other side of the road, and I damn near stepped out and got whacked on a street in London. So, yeah, education is a big part of it. But the other side of it is that
there's some common sense involved.
Yeah, there's common sense involved, and there's a learning curve, and I wasn't drunk or anything else. I was 14 years old. And damn near got whacked just because the car was on the wrong side of the road, as far as I was concerned when I first got there. An electric motorcycle is going to be as silent as a Prius or a Tesla.
If not more so.
Yeah.
Although,
do you
although
really want to add more noise pollution?
Although the idea of an electric, I mean, I don't know why that hasn't been, I don't know why we're only hearing about it right now. I mean, my personal bee under my bonnet right now, if I could get, you know, the meeting with Elon Musk or whatever, an electric pickup truck. I know it sounds crazy, but when you get Bubba's buying electric pickup trucks, that's when the game actually changes.
And 90% of the people who buy pickup trucks, I have one. I won't have anything but a pickup truck. 90% of the time, I could be driving a smart car. But going to market tomorrow, I need my truck. But it's only 5 miles away from the house.
Yeah. And there's a lot of stuff to recommend the idea, because when you think about, for instance, the available torque from an electric motor, well, if you're into the whole four-wheel drive thing and you actually need it, well, my God, wouldn't an electric, I mean, that's instantaneous torque. That's tree-climbing torque, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. But up here in Northern California, when people go out four-wheeling, going deer hunting and all the rest of that stuff, they're 3, 4, 5 days of maybe a week away from power. And so gasoline is the only thing that'll carry that far and that many miles and road hunting and all the rest of it. But for the majority of the people that drive Nissans, Toyotas, small Fords, rest of that, the small pickup trucks, if they would make them electric, I think there's a hell of a market.
Yeah, well, and that's the premium power supply on a Tesla is good for a 285-mile range. Now, even at least here in West Virginia, even going deer hunting, that's within the range.
Yeah.
And I guess the real question, and I got to thinking about it, because the next car that's going to come out from Tesla, you know, the S sedan is out now. The next one that's going to come out is the Tesla X, and it's a crossover passenger hauler with third row rear seating. You can step into it, not crawl into it, and it's going to have all-wheel drive, which I understand is different from four-wheel drive and massively different from being able to have a granny gear you can drop down into. And see, I think the idea has merit. Haley just sent in a tweet. I so want an electric pickup. Perhaps my current one will hold out long enough so that it comes to pass.
Now, if my pickup's a 2000.
And see, then there's all the little cultural
changes. Two or three?
Yeah, there's all the little cultural changes that happen. You know, the Bubbas start driving the electric pickup trucks, and then. Somebody writes a country song with lots of twang and maybe some pedal steel and fiddle in it, talking about I was charging up my pickup truck down to the solar station when I seen her walking by on the street outside, and then boom, marketing.
Yep. Needs to be a diesel electric hybrid, I would say.
I think eventually it'll be a straight up. Straight up full on electric, because I mean, I used to love diesel, but ever since I got to know Dr. McCauley and I've learned about ultrafines, I don't want nothing to do with no diesel, because it doesn't matter whether it's biodiesel or corn oil or canola oil or petroleum hydrocarbons, you get ultrafines out the kazoo with diesel.
Yeah, but that little Kubota tractor with the 48-inch wide rototiller that I borrow every year to till up my garden is great.
Well, yeah, I mean, it hath its advantages. Remember, Professor Diesel developed his technology for farm applications.
Because the farm could produce their own fuel.
Bingo. Neat how that works, huh?
And then it got pushed because diesel was a byproduct of making gasoline, and after they made gasoline, they had to figure out something to do with the leftover oil, so they pushed diesel.
There you go. And I hate to say it, but we got to get out of here, gang. It's been a lovely conversation. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Sparky, for your moderating powers. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Devin. Thank you, Sergi. Hi, John. You didn't say anything, but... Thank you for being here, and thanks, Roger. Thanks to everybody in the chat room. Thanks to everybody who has contributed over the course of the week to get us finished even. Thank you very much for coming in at the very in the last instant, Henry. Thank you so much. Thanks for the challenges from everyone. Just thanks all the way around. Thank you for the time, the finite, precious time you spend in listening and sharing with this ongoing conversation. Thank you. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acheact.org, acheact.org. If you want to make West Virginia a little better place, working with us on getting the ACE Act passed is a great place to start. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody. More and Monday gets here before we even know it.